Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Before You Buy, episode 51, delivered Christmas Day 2012. The best of 2012. Hey, everybody, welcome to our holiday special. Of course, it's Christmas Day, so we're not going to do a brand new Before You Buy. But, you know, even though this is a brand new show, only a few months old, we've had some great moments. We're going to put together some of our favorite reviews from 2012. I hope you enjoy, and we'll see you right back here next year for many great reviews. We thank our producers of Before You Buy. For the first part of the year was Nicole Lee. Lately, it's been Snubs, the wonderful Shannon Morse. She's doing such a great job. Shannon and I and the Before You Buy team will be back next year. We hope you will, too. Meanwhile, have a great holiday season, a safe and happy New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and we'll see you next year. Bye-bye. Going to review the Galaxy S3. In fact, you kind of got already a little bit of a peek at it. This is the latest, hottest Android phone, a very strong contender for the best Android phone out there with the HTC One. This is the version I'm using is the unlocked international version because, of course, I had to have it before everybody else. And I'll tell you a few of the things I love about this phone. First of all, it is a 4.8-inch Super AMOLED display that is just gorgeous. Now, Samsung did make this a pentile display. That's the same kind of display that the Galaxy Nexus used, and I didn't like because I saw a lot of color noise in the whites on the Galaxy Nexus. Well, they've avoided that problem with this display. There is nothing to complain about. They have three modes, a dynamic mode, a natural mode. I have it on the most dynamic, colorful mode because it's so colorful. I just love this display. And by the way, notice how smoothly, this is Samsung's TouchWiz 4 to go with the ice cream sandwich on this phone. Notice how smoothly I'm going from page to page. This is, believe it or not, a quad-core Exynos processor in here running at 1.4 gigahertz. That's a lot of power for a smartphone, so much so that I thought, you know, I'm going to put my aquarium wallpaper. I never use this wallpaper because it uses up so many CPU cycles. On a normal phone, this would slow it down. But you know what? This phone is so fast, I can afford to spend some CPU cycles on having fish. Let me just feed these fish. I'll just tap it right up here, and they all come to the top of the screen and get their food. It is dinner time, after all. This is the 16-gigabyte version. They do sell a 32-gigabyte version. You can add an SD card. So I've got the 16-gigabyte version with a 32-gig SD card. To me, that's plenty of horsepower, plenty of storage. This uses an 8-megapixel camera. In fact, according to iFixit in their teardown of the Samsung Galaxy S3, this is exactly the same Sony part that the iPhone 4S uses. And I did find, in fact, an excellent camera. And the camera app on here, this is the Samsung camera app, not the ice cream sandwich camera app, has some really sweet features. 1080p, 30 frame per second video that looks spectacular. And you see, we also have some special kind of shooting modes, including an HDR mode that I found was quite good. A smile shot that actually looks for smiles in the picture and waits till somebody smiles. And a panorama that's great, that's automatic and very fast using this 1.4 gigahertz processor. I take 8 images. It stitches them together almost as fast as I can save it. There's also a cartoon mode that, you know, some other modes that you'll hardly ever use. It's got a decent flash, although, as always, flash on camera phones isn't very good. I'd say this camera is not quite as good as the iPhone 4S camera. Obviously, Apple's done some real optimization in their software, but it's pretty sweet. Now, you are going to want that 1080p video because this is an HD screen, 1280 lengthwise by 720 across. That makes this over 300 dots per inch. Is this a Retina display? You bet. It's probably the best display I've ever used, and that includes the high-quality iPhone 4S display. So a gorgeous phone. All the carriers, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, and T-Mobile in the U.S. say we're going to carry it by the end of June, early July. And the prices I've seen, which are kind of interesting, are very affordable. They are charging $200 with a two-year contract. That is about $100 less than the premium Android phones have been in the past. Obviously, they want to be competitive. By the way, that $200 is a pretty good deal Well, at least on the unlocked version, I got 2 years of Dropbox, 50 gigs of Dropbox storage included in that price. Unfortunately, AT&T and I believe Sprint have both declined to take advantage of that Dropbox offer. So for reasons I don't understand, you won't get it. One thing you will get, though, is an Android exclusive. This is the amazing Flipboard, which has been out on the iPhone since December. It's already out on Android, but only on the Galaxy S3. And boy, it's a great way to show off this beautiful, fast device. I mean, it really, really looks good. I have to say, I'm very, very happy with this phone in every respect. Are there negatives? Well, you've heard me talk about the pros. Very, very fast, probably faster than you'll ever need on a smartphone. A gorgeous 4.8-inch, 1280 by 720 screen. You can't get better than that, at least not right now. It's smaller than my Galaxy Note, but you know what? I like it a little bit smaller. I still have as much resolution, as much stuff on the screen as I did on the Note. It doesn't have the Galaxy Note's pen, the S Pen, no stylus included. I don't really miss that. In fact, the only negative I could come up with on this phone is because it's so... Oh, look how thin it is, too. And they've also eliminated the bump that was part of the Galaxy S2. So thin, very light. It's plastic on the back, Gorilla Glass 2 on the front. And that is my negative on this. It's kind of slippery. And because, the Galaxy S3 is a fairly new phone, there are a dearth of accessories. Very few decent cases available. It's not like an iPhone in that respect, and I kind of miss that. Samsung has bundled some very nice apps. The TouchWiz interface 4.0, I think, is quite good. It's very unobtrusive, but you, of course, could use another launcher like Nova on this. In fact, I'm going to be trying one called Apex a little bit later on. The Galaxy S Memo application is quite good. I like that a lot. The camera app that the Samsung's provided here is good. They have their new Music Hub music store on here. I'm not going to use that. But believe it or not, the music player that this comes with is pretty darn good. In fact, good enough that I replaced DoubleTwist with it. It's the music player I use. Oh, and that's another nice feature of this phone. It supports DLNA. So I was able to launch Pandora and the music player and immediately play music from my phone to my home stereo system. My Onkyo AV receiver supports DLNA. Many TV sets do. Even my little Grace Mondo internet radio supports it. So I was able to play audio from this phone to a variety of devices. Video looks great on it. It's a little slippery. It doesn't have a whole bunch of accessories. But in every other respect, this is a phone worthy of being, of the title, the best phone on the market. Certainly, at least as good as the HTC One, which is the tough one out there right now. I think this is a fantastic phone. They got pre-orders of 9 million units before the phone was even available in the, even announced in the U.S. I suspect by the time it ships June 21st in the U.S., they're going to have sold very many more. This is probably going to be the biggest selling phone out there for some time to come. The Galaxy S3, buy it. Buy it. There's no question in my mind. This is absolutely the nicest phone I've ever used. And whenever I show it to anybody in person, they ooh and ah. They say, boy, that is really gorgeous. This screen will just knock your socks off. We're going to start off with one of our favorites from the great show TNT, Jason Howell. He's the producer and editor of TNT and the welcome fourth person on the show. Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good
to
How
see
you.
Doing, Leo? You've been craving a chance to review this.
And I did, yes. I've never actually had a chance to spend a lot of time with any of Asus's Transformer tablets. They've had quite a few over the past year. This is their latest. It's the Transformer Pad Infinity. It's actually the tablet as well as the mobile dock, which is what you see
Ooh.
Right there.
Well, let's take a look at your
pretty
review.
Fancy.
Yep.
Jason Howell, and I'm here with the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity. I actually have the tablet as well as the mobile dock accessory that I'm going to review. Let's take a quick look at the specs. It is running NVIDIA's new Tegra 3 quad-core T33 processor at 1.6 gigahertz with 1 gig of RAM. It has a 1920 by 1200 IPS Plus LED backlit display, micro SD card slot, micro HDMI, 2-megapixel front-facing camera, an 8-megapixel rear-facing camera with LED flash that's capable of 1080p video, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, gyroscope, accelerometer, and GPS antennas. No mobile carrier supports. Keep that in mind. And finally, it's running Android 4.0.3 ice cream sandwich. One other thing to note, it actually comes in this color, which is amethyst gray. You can also get it in a champagne gold color if you so choose. Let's take a look at the design. I'll take it out of the dock for a second here. It's mostly aluminum unibody design. Gives it a really nice, solid feel. With a very small plastic strip up at the top, which supposedly improves GPS signal due to an issue in previous versions with such a thing. It's comfortably thin. It actually bests the new iPad on that front, and it's very light to hold to boot. Now, my one issue is that it has the single speaker down here at the bottom corner, and when you're gaming or holding it for a movie like this, you end up cupping the speaker and kind of blocking some of the audio so it can flange a little bit. Maybe they should have placed it in a little bit better spot since you're more likely to hold it like this when used. Now, as far as the display, it's actually a very impressive looking display. Definitely the best 10-inch Android tablet display I've seen to date. There's little to no discernible pixels when you really look up close on it. You can hardly see them. It's extremely bright. It has the IPS Plus mode, which I believe it's in right now. If I deactivate it, it's on full brightness without IPS Plus. And then if you're outside, you just hit that and you get that extra boost. The IPS gives you wonderful viewing angles, as you can see. The camera on the front is a 2-megapixel front-facing camera. It's pretty good when it gets focused. I had some focus issues on it where it would focus in behind me and trying to have a hard time catching that focal point. The rear-facing camera is also good, but it's a little bit washed out for my taste. I prefer a little bit more saturation than what I was getting out of here. But overall, the pictures were a combination of, you know, pretty detailed to somewhat flat on the color spectrum. And HD video recorded on the rear-facing camera. Maybe a little bit of frame skipping issues there, but overall, it looked pretty decent. Now, maneuvering the OS is actually seemed very smooth. So going into your app tray and skipping around the OS, things were fluid. It's definitely a workhorse, and it's great at doing things like multitasking. It's also great at gaming. The body does get hot, however, during high processor intensive things. Right over on this side of the tablet, it would heat up. So keep that in mind. Now, the Transformer Pad Infinity also includes some of Asus's software. They have their WaveShare UI overlay, which is very minimal. Really, one of the only places you truly see it is in the notification panel. You have these toggle buttons, and that's actually a pretty good improvement. Now, the battery inside this device has to be pretty chunky because it's doing a lot. And thankfully, they've packed a 25 watt hour battery that actually packs a nice punch. It's needed to serve those power hungry specs. It has excellent battery efficiency, especially since Asus included 3 power efficiency modes if you go into the notification toggle. And finally, if you want to add extra battery efficiency to your use, add another 19.5 watt hour battery to the entire equation. And that's thanks to the mobile dock, which has a battery built into it. It's $150 for this. It's an extra accessory. It has a built-in SD card and USB ports for expandability. All in all, I'd say if you're getting one, you should get both. I highly recommend that. So let's take a quick look at the pros. The display is beautiful, even in highlight situations. Its performance, I mean, it performs alongside the best Android tablets right now. And the mobile dock accessory capability is a major differentiator and takes this tablet to a new level. Now the cons. The camera on the front as well as the back, the pictures tend to be a bit washed out. It's only Wi-Fi, so if you need that mobile network support, you're not going to find it here. And the speaker is placed somewhat poorly on this device. But overall, it's really kind of reaching. It's hard to find many faults with this tablet. I absolutely recommend it as a buy. This is the best 10-inch Android tablet that I've played with to date. And with the optional mobile dock keyboard accessory, people looking for an Android tablet that can act as a laptop, really you can't find anything better than the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity. You can catch my reviews on All About Android at twit.tv/AAA. And thank you so much for checking out my review of the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity.
Thank you, Jason. So the full review's on YouTube if you want to look, youtube.com/twit.
Yeah. You can find it in the Before You Buy kind of full reviews playlist. It's, like
it's about two and a half minutes longer.
Yeah.
Now, I'm wondering, Asus makes the Nexus 7, which I really love. That comes with Jelly Bean, the latest version of Android. What version of Android's on here?
Well, this is Ice Cream Sandwich. Asus
the previous version.
Yes. Asus has said that Jelly Bean is to come out soon. And actually, I mentioned it in the longer review. after getting used to the improvements of Jelly Bean with the butter enhancements, you definitely see it. Like, this was one of my first times going back to a tablet with ice cream sandwich, and you see a little bit of that frame skipping. So it'll be a very nice upgrade once it comes through.
A
hopefully
good product
soon.
That can only get better
exactly.
with Jelly Bean.
Yeah.
Boy, it's a gorgeous screen. People probably can't tell on camera, but it is about the nicest screen I've seen.
Yeah,
really
it's
high
super
res,
bright,
just beautiful.
Very, very punchy. I like it.
Make me want it. Thank you, Jason. All right, Jason Howell, all about Android.
Speaking of Windows RT, I have my new Surface. It's interesting because there's been a lot of interest around the building. I had to, people. Prior reports taking it from me. I had to pry it away
from
me.
I heard everybody was trying to steal it from you.
To do my review. Fortunately, Alex Gumpel got his. You were able to play with his a little bit. What do you think? How do you like the new Surface tablet?
It's really easy to figure out. That was the first thing I noticed. And there's a couple of different things on here that even the Apple iPod iPad doesn't have. For example, if you turn it upside down, it'll switch around for you.
Well, what I really like is this Metro interface. Now, I know Microsoft says don't call it Metro anymore.
Yeah.
They started it with the Windows Phone 7. And the idea is these are tiles, but they're also live tiles. And you can notice mm-hmm. them changing from time to time. For instance, that's my email tile. And it's just scrolling bit by bit through a number of emails. Here's a people tile that has messages from Twitter and Facebook. Here's weather. And by the way, when you tap on a tile, these are, for the most part, beautiful applications. A lot of them come from Microsoft.
Now, you can only download Microsoft's different applications right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. This has the Microsoft Store on it, very much like the iPad. I think people will consider this a benefit because it does mean that Microsoft has vetted all the apps, and in theory, this should be a lot more secure.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the store, and you can see there are literally already thousands of apps. Remember that this is a brand new platform. This is not Windows 7 or 8. Won't run standard Windows apps at all, nor is this Windows Phone. Won't run those apps. It will only run apps specifically written for Windows RT. It's running an ARM processor. There are two different kinds of keyboards you can get with it. It's by itself. It's just a tablet, and you can buy it standalone as a tablet. This is the home key if you do that.
Ooh, cool.
And it has a pop-up keyboard, so it's no problem to type on it. The keyboard looks very much. Let me run OneNote, and I'll create a new note and show you. The keyboard looks very much like when I start typing the iPad keyboard, and it's just as typable. And as you mentioned, there is a horizontal mode that you can also do that. And this is very much like the iPad. But it does point out one thing that's very different from the iPad. It is a 16:9 screen. So it's widescreen.
Wide
so
screen.
When you're in this orientation, the portrait orientation, it looks kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little too tall. This is something some other tablets have a similar problem with. I don't think people are going to use it as a tablet. It feels thick, clunky. Ironically, it's the same weight and even the same width as the Apple iPad, but it feels thicker and heavier just because of the nature of its design. When you buy it, you can also buy it with an optional keyboard. There's two kinds. There's the touch and the type. This is a type keyboard. The touch keyboard has keys that are just surface, flat on the surface. You just touch them. The type keyboard actually has moving keys. Oh, there we go. There's a touch keyboard. I guess
yeah.
That's Alex bought the cheap one. And you can see it's a full keyboard, but these don't move. These feel very much like a laptop. They move more than I thought. I thought these would be like Chiclet keys, but they're actually regular touch keys.
Personally, I like when
much
you can
better,
actually feel it.
Yeah. You could type for a long time on this. I'm not sure how long you'd want to type on the touch keyboard. They're only $10 apart. That's the interesting thing. $129 for type, $119 for touch. The touch has one advantage, though. You can get it in many, many colors. Type only comes in black.
Oh.
The other thing Microsoft's really selling is the click. And this has a much stronger magnet than the smart cover for the iPad. In fact, I can...
Leo!
It scares you, doesn't it? But it's really... Go ahead. It's really strong. In fact, try to separate those. You'll get a sense of how strongly...
There we go.
It really jams together.
That's cool.
Frankly, I think that you're mostly going to want to use this in its laptop mode. It has a little kickstand that pops up in the back here like that. And that... makes this the laptop mode. There is only one angle when you're using the kickstand, but it's a decent angle if you're sitting in front of it at a normal distance. And in fact, you can see it's quite a good screen. You can see it from almost any angle. I'm not sure, but I would suspect it's an IPS screen. The colors are quite bright and vivid. I actually like the screen. In fact, I'll show you if I run a Netflix movie on it that it's perfect for watching The Family
Guy. Oh, that's great.
The Family Guy. Let me press play. I'm probably violating copyright right now. Now, what you're seeing here is one of the cons on this, which is it's a first-generation device from Microsoft. And while they've done a lot of very interesting things, I think very innovative. I love the UI on the start screen. There's no more start tab. There is a desktop, but only Microsoft apps can use the desktop. And right now, that means Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. But what is nice is it comes with Office 2013, Word, Excel.
Oh, you don't have to buy it separately.
You don't have to buy it separately. Nice. It's part of the price, which is a great advantage. And it's very almost identical to the full desktop, as far as I can tell, to the full desktop Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. No Outlook. But when you here's another con. When you start to use it, you'll see that these touch points are very, very small in the desktop. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, this touch keyboard and the type keyboard come with a trackpad with left and right click. So you really do have a full mouse and a full keyboard. So it's very much like a laptop. And frankly, that's what my takeaway was on this, that while it is, in theory, a full tablet, rare are the times you want to use it as a tablet. It really feels kind of odd in the hand. It's an odd shape. It's an odd weight. And I don't see a lot of people browsing this as a tablet. I really see it more as a new kind of laptop. And I think what Microsoft's almost saying with this is where we think all of Windows is going, to small portable devices that have touch integrated in. All Windows 8 should have touch because it's such a touch-focused, such a touch-centric operating system. I think even if you buy a desktop computer with Windows 8, you'll really want a touch screen on it. And when you fold it all up, it isn't very big. I mean, this cover, this type cover, fits flush, just like kind of the Apple Smart cover.
Does it weigh much?
Well, go ahead and try it.
It feels like a pound.
This is the irony of it. It's exactly the same weight as the iPad.
Oh, is it really?
But if somehow to me, it just feels a little denser, a little heavier. I think it's well made. I think it's a good device. It does have a front and rear facing camera. The camera's at an interesting angle. I think this was something Microsoft did that was kind of smart. This camera is angled, so when you're using Skype, you're actually in the you don't have to arrange the lid.
Oh, that's nice. I always have that problem with my laptop.
Yeah, people always have to say tilt it forward or backward. But remember, you can't tilt this forward and backward, and it might be that's one of the reasons Microsoft did this, because you're kind of stuck with this particular angle of this particular camera. But it works quite well. It also is a very wide-angle camera, so you should be able to get a bunch of people on a single Skype call easily. Skype camera works. Skype audio works just as you would expect. Skype is one of many free apps. Most of the apps actually are free right now. Let me just set up the video here. I think we can see each other. Let me see. No, maybe not. I can't turn on the camera without making a call. But you can trust me. It does a good job. The special keys that are part of Windows 8 are all on the keyboard, including the Windows key to bring us back always to the start menu. As I said, that also works. That little button on the front also works to bring you back. If you want to bring in charms, just as on your trackpad, you slide in from the right-hand side from the bezel. If you want to go to the previous application, you just slide from the left-hand side. And that works quite well. The context shifting switching on this is actually very effective. Some have complained that when you've got a lot of applications running on this, it gets a little sluggish. It does only have 2 gigabytes of RAM. This is the 32-gig model. There's a 64-gig model. But you can add storage, and that's something else the iPad doesn't do. This has an SD card slot, so you can put in SD card memory into this to add to the memory. I know the slot is
here somewhere. That's nice. And we noticed it had USB, too, so you can do
it. It has
an
external hard drive, USB port. In fact, we've occupied that with the mouse connector, but there's a real USB port. There's also video out. Charging might look a little familiar to you. You see those pogo pins. They look very much like the MagSafe adapter on Apple's notebooks. It's not the same size. It's a little bit bigger, but it works the same way. This is a magnetic adapter. Yep. And it pulls off fairly easily, so you won't pull the surface to the ground. And it goes in either direction. for charging. Charging's pretty quick, just a couple of hours to get roughly 6 to 8 hours of battery life. That'll depend heavily on what you're doing with it. But because it's an ARM device, it does get excellent battery life. It's designed to be portable and to have good battery life. I love the sign-on screen. I love the touch. I love the new Metro interface. I think Microsoft has done a very innovative, interesting job with this. It's got some really great hardware features. The cameras are good on this. The screen is gorgeous. The feel and fit and finish is very high, surprisingly high if you ask me. Go ahead and, yeah, you can play with it. So let me give you the pros and the cons. What are you going to do? Oh, I got a call coming
someone.
In. Let's call Twit Live line two and see if we can see ourselves.
There we are.
All right.
Hi.
Now let me send a picture.
We have her picture down there in the corner.
That was video off. Let's turn video on. And are you sending? Oh, Skype Live is not sending us a Twit Live is not sending us a picture. But it is? Well, why don't I see it? So you saw how easy it was to switch from the front facing to the rear facing. Just
that's
a tap
cool.
of Skype. Yeah, there's a lot of little thoughtful touches like this. It's as if somebody actually used one of these things.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if you can.
No. It does have pinch and zoom and a lot of things. There's the image coming from the back camera. Let me switch over to the image from the front camera.
Oh, nice.
I'll tell you what, I'll look at myself. So you'd probably be using it sitting like this, and you can see it works. The angle, the camera's tilted at such an angle, it looks quite good. I think the color and the image is pretty good. This shirt is a difficult red for a lot of cameras to
capture. I feel extremely tall right now. This is so strange.
Well, let's see if you're as tall as I think you are.
Let's see.
Oh, my gosh.
Hi.
She's a giant. So, you know, I'm really torn on this. I am very impressed that Microsoft was able to do something so different, so innovative, in a world where really everybody's copying Apple. Microsoft's made some interesting design choices that make this very different from an Apple device. It's not quite a tablet. It's not quite a laptop. You'll probably want to use it in laptop mode. Andy Iannacco and I were talking about this. He said the same thing. When you take it in the hand as a tablet, it just doesn't quite feel right. It almost begs to be used in this laptop mode. And I think if you consider a Surface RT, that you should remember that. Now, there will be other tablets from other manufacturers running the Windows RT. This is just a review of the Surface device. I do think Windows RT is a very interesting operating system. I know we'll see a lot of apps, and all of the apps I really want are here. Internet Explorer works fairly well on it. Some people have complained about its speed. It isn't a super speed demon. It's a Tegra 3 chip, and as I said, it's a little light on RAM, so you can see Internet Explorer is taking its time to load that page.
Well, I hope we can get Chrome on there eventually.
Pardon me?
Skype call. You're still in it.
You think the Skype call is slowing it down? It could well be. Could well be. This is a Wi-Fi only device, no GPS. They will offer later, I think it's next month, 3G versions. We're still in that Skype. Why can't I? All right, hang up on that
cool.
Skype call.
We're hung up.
Multitasks very nicely. On the pros on this, great screen, great hardware build. I am a little worried about how this keyboard is going to last. It's going to get a little frayed on the edges as time goes by. And it isn't as it on a flat surface, it's fine, but you cannot type on your lap or anything that isn't absolutely flat.
Is it bendable at all?
It flexes, absolutely.
Okay.
And so it's not going to give you a very solid typing thing. When you get I do recommend the type keyboard because you've got full keyboard movement. If you're going to do any typing at all, this is really the way to do it. And I think this is something Apple could learn from. This is a nice little keyboard. It is $499 for the Wi-Fi version minus the keyboard, another $100 if you want to get the keyboard. As I mentioned, the two different keyboards have different prices. I don't think this is a good keyboard. Alex, what do you think? Should anybody buy the touch keyboard? Spend $10 more and get the type keyboard. Other cons on this device. As I mentioned, it occasionally is a little wonky. For instance, the desktop icons disappeared. I'd only used it a day. I installed the update to Microsoft Office, and the desktop icons all went blank. I had to reinstall those. That was kind of annoying. And there are little bugs like that. But remember, this is very early, first generation. I expect many of those bugs are in software and can be worked out. The bigger question is, are we going to get more apps in the App Store? And because this is Microsoft and because it's Windows, I suspect so. I'm sure that all of the traditional players are looking carefully to see how well this sells, but I suspect we'll see a wide range of software. In fact, you may be surprised to see many of the programs that you want are already in the Microsoft App Store. Potential con, but I think in the long run it's not going to be. Price is right. Hardware's great. It really comes down to how you feel about Windows RT and whether you want to use the Windows 8 operating system. I'm going to have to say, if you're a Windows lover and you're interested in using the latest, greatest Windows, this is a buy. It's a very impressive piece of hardware. But for many people, this will be disappointing. So you probably should try it if you can at the Microsoft Store or at a Microsoft, somewhere that sells Surface tablets, to make which is, I think, only the Microsoft stores. Don't buy this sight unseen. You really want to get a sense of whether this is going to work for you in the way you need it to work. But I am very impressed. I am very impressed. I was kind of skeptical about Windows 8 and in particular about Microsoft's ability to make compelling hardware. This has shown that Microsoft is viable, really has some interesting ideas up its sleeve, and I'm very impressed by the fact that this thing is as good as it is, given that it's the very first generation.
So it's still a definite buy. For me.
A try for you, because you're a Mac. Are you a Mac or a Windows user?
I'm Mac, Windows, and Linux. Ah. I'm all over the place, but I can't really see myself using this like day to day for work or anything like that.
I'd say it's a try in the same way that maybe the iPad or the Kindle or the Amazon. I mean, the Google Nexus 7 is a try. Not a, a tablet isn't for everybody,
right?
But for somebody who wants a very light traveling notebook computer, comes with Microsoft Office
for
$499.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good deal. So I'm going to give it a buy. Shannon's going to give it a try. Jason Howell of TNT and the host of All About Android was at the Google I/O Developer Conference a couple of weeks ago and was one of the first to get the new Google Nexus 7 7-inch tablet for $200. Jason, is it worth it?
Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here with the ASUS Nexus 7. Now, this is an important device for Google and ASUS. It's essentially a Nexus-branded tablet, flagship device for Google, showing off the new version of Android, Jelly Bean 4.1. And it's an incredible tablet for the price, especially. $199 for an 8-gig version, $249 for a 16-gig version. Let's take a quick look at the specs. It's a 1.3 gigahertz quad-core NVIDIA Tegra 3 processor with 1 gig of RAM, 1280 by 800 HD LED backlit IPS display with 10-point multi-touch, has a 1.2 megapixel front-facing camera, and it lacks an SD card slot. It does, however, have Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC, GPS, accelerometer, magnetometer, gyroscope, and a microphone. There is no cellular connectivity for this tablet. And it features a non-removable 4,326 milliamp hour battery underneath. Let's take a look at the design. It's an impressive, compact, contoured, and light tablet. The design, it just feels expensive, especially for the low cost. You don't expect it. It has a nice rubberized backing right back here that really keeps it from slipping out of your hands, and it just has a nice, solid feel to it. And overall, this tablet just feels solid and rigid. It does not feel inexpensive in the least bit. Now the display, with a higher resolution and smaller screen size, the pixel density on this, which is about 216 pixels per inch, is very crisp, and it's only really noticeable if you get extremely close to the tablet, which you probably won't. It can be somewhat dim in highlight situations. Overall, it has excellent viewing angles. It's just a really good display on this tablet, way better than the price would make you believe. Now, performance. System-wide performance is actually very fluid. Little to no noticeable stutter when moving from home screens and then jumping to the app drawer and throughout included apps. Overall, it's very fluid. Gaming performance is, again, very impressive. This is actually a really good gaming tablet with the NVIDIA Tegra 3 processor. It's just very powered for gaming. Grand Theft Auto 3 played easily. Also, a new game, Dead Trigger, actually plays like a charm as well on this. It was very enjoyable to play games on this form factor. Chrome is the browser of choice. It's installed on here as the default browser. First time for Android that that's been the case, and you're happy that it's there. It syncs with all of your other desktop instances of Chrome and other devices, and it's just really a fast and convenient browser on Android, though there is no flash support in Chrome, so keep that in mind. Use another browser for that. All right, now on to camera. Now, there really isn't a whole lot to say because, as you can see here, there's no rear-facing camera on the Nexus 7, only a 1.3-megapixel front-facing camera. They don't really intend for you to take pictures with this tablet. That doesn't really bother me. It'll bother some people. And the front-facing camera is serviceable for things like video conferencing, Skype, that sort of stuff. Now onto content, which is kind of a big play for Google because they're trying to drive more people to the Play Store. Google's improved the quantity and types of content on Google Play to include the option to purchase movies instead of just rent them. TV shows can be purchased as well as magazines. And for a limited time, Nexus 7 comes with a $25 Google Play credit to get you used to buying through the store. So even more value for the low price of the tablet. Unfortunately, though, the content, the amount of content that you'll find in the Play Store kind of pales in comparison to the offerings of other competing OSs like iOS, as well as other ecosystems on Android, such as Amazon's. There's just a little more found in those other places versus what you'll find in the Play Store. So if you're looking for content, you might have to wait a little bit before Google's gets on par with those. And finally, what does it mean to be a Nexus tablet? This is about as scaled down of a version of the OS as you can get, with no carrier overlays like HTC's Sense or anything like that to get in the way. This is true Android, and being that it's the new version of Android Jelly Bean, it's actually kind of an exciting deal to get into it so early. On top of that, Nexus also means you're going to get any updates and support direct from Google, which means no delays in the back end. So ultimately, it means you'll probably be most likely to get the updates to the new versions of Android before anybody else, and that's a big plus. So let's take a look at the pros. It's a low-cost, high-quality design. It has impressive performance system-wide, has a sharp display, and it's a Nexus. And the cons: there is no expandable memory, content options are lacking compared to some of the competition, and for those who care, there's no rear-facing camera. But ultimately, that is not enough of a ding for me. I have no hesitation of recommending that you buy the Nexus 7. Quite simply, Google and Asus have created a winner here, and this is a fantastic tablet, and you get so much good technology underneath for such a low price, you can't pass it up. Find my reviews on All About Android at twit.tv/AAA. Thanks for checking out this review of the Asus Nexus 7.
Oh, I am so excited about that tablet. That is an amazing price. My only negative, the screen a little bit dim. I've been playing with it too, but I think this is a really compelling product. No wonder all the rumors are that Apple is going to come up with a competitor in just a few months. Now let's introduce one of our newest employees, Josh Windisch. Josh, it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
Ironically, you're not the newest anymore, and we hired you like 2 weeks ago.
I know.
Josh is working on the new Tech Guy Labs site. In fact, he's entering in all the data, but we'll find other things for you to do too, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, we found one thing for you to do. We found a helicopter for
you
to fly. What is this? The Parrot AR drone has been around for a while. In fact, I remember it's got a lot of attention at CES about 3 years ago because, it was a perfect thing for network television because it just hovered.
Yeah.
It floated. Well, they've done some things to improve it. First of all, they've improved the balancing act. It's got four rotors in it, but they've also put a camera on it. And this is a pretty cool... So you got to review it, you lucky son of a gun.
I know.
How do you fly it?
So basically, here, let's put it on the floor.
You want to fly it?
Yeah.
We can fly it now?
Yeah, let's fly it now.
What could possibly go wrong?
Let's fire this baby. Don't say that.
Now, they do put a guard. You don't have to use the guard, but they do put a guard around it so that if it did run into you. But
yes.
These are plastic rotors.
Still wouldn't want to get hit by one.
Okay.
Okay, so let's take off.
Is it hard to fly, did you find?
It actually...
Wow. That's like my Dyson.
Okay.
Look at that. Why don't I just stay there for a second?
Whoa. Okay.
Look at that. Ow! Okay, just so you know,
yeah.
It doesn't hurt that much. It stabilizes, so... Even if you try to knock it off course, it actually is, and that's software
that's
carefully working to keep it balanced. So not hard to keep hovering. How do you steer it?
So you steer it with the accelerometer of the device that you're using. So with
iPhone,
the
iPad, or Android phone.
That's right, and it will use the accelerometer to steer it. The cool thing about this one that's an upgrade from the last is something called absolute control, which is actually kind of a miscommunication in the instructions because they talk about absolute control and magneto control,
right?
Which they're the same thing. So In the app, if you turn absolute control on, no matter which way the device is facing, because you can see I can turn
look
it.
Look at that.
No matter which way it's facing, when I steer it toward me, it will come toward me.
Left is left, right is right.
That's right.
And, you know, when they first came out with this, they had games that would play outside at CES, and it was very difficult because you had to get used to the fact that the orientation could change depending on how the drone was oriented. So this way, it's always going to go the way you expect.
It's always going to go the way you expect.
Makes it
now, if I can get this... I can get this over here. I want to show something else that's really cool.
Okay.
If we can switch to another camera.
Good, right through the wires. That's
good. There we go. All right.
All right. Isn't that spooky? It's just floating there.
It is. So this is what I want to show.
Don't kill Alex, okay? you can get that other guy, though. I don't care if you hit him.
Okay. So now if I double tap on the screen, watch what happens. Nothing.
What's supposed to happen?
It's supposed to do a flip.
No.
It's supposed to do a barrel roll.
You mean it just have an automatic barrel roll button?
And for some reason, it's not doing it on the iPad.
What could possibly go wrong? You know this is a million-dollar studio, right, Josh?
Don't tell me that right now. Don't tell me that.
Right, new employee.
Don't tell me that.
Let's do a barrel roll.
I can't get it to do it. Well, that's the only real trick that...
Now, we have some video, right? We can show some video of you using this.
We do have
this.
Video. Actually, the first one is just me kind of flying it around in the basement.
Much better place because it's harder to get in trouble down there.
There's the video that it takes. So it takes
HD. That's coming off the drone.
Yes, it takes HD video. So there's the perspective of the drone right there.
And you can see it's a very wide angle. So you could actually fly. And this is, again, the drone?
Yes, this is the drone. This is 720p.
Wow. So you could fly it above a roof or... Wow,
yep, you could. Now, we didn't want to do that because... It was
windy. We would lose it, for sure.
Yes, with the wind.
He's landed there.
So yeah, landed
there. Now, I have to say, that is already like 100 times easier to fly.
Yeah.
Unless you're amazingly skilled.
No, I'm not.
I don't suspect you are. No, knock on you, Josh.
Of course.
But you've only had this a week. Less than a week, really. Four days you've had it.
Yeah, well, we were playing around with it on the radio show, too.
Yeah, it was a lot of
fun. We had a lot of fun.
So what's the other video here?
So the other video is actually, because it has two cameras. It has one... pointing forward, and there's another one on the bottom. The bottom one isn't HD, so it's not going to look as good. But here's me right here. I landed it on Burke's face. Now, I don't know what the green artifacting was.
Burke's smart because he does have a special... By the way, that's how you should do this, with a protective shield.
Actually, you probably shouldn't try to land it on anyone's face at all.
Do not land.
But if you're going to, Burke was smart on that one.
Now, is it hours of fun? I mean, or did you kind of lose interest after a while?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's kind of what I was dealing with, is it seems like it's fun for a while, and then I feel like this could possibly wear off, because there's no real practical use for this.
Right.
It's just fun, and it's an amazing device. I mean, it hovers in midair.
You could use it as an aerial camera. I mean, it might make interesting videos.
That is interesting. The only
bad
part
is... Can you put something on it? Like, could you put a GoPro Hero on it or something like that? Or is it... It probably won't support enough...
I don't think it would support the weight. But
it's really for what it is, right?
The bad part, though, is the battery. And that's what kind of prevents you from doing anything practical with it.
Right.
Because the battery, you get like 10, 15 minutes tops of flying time with it. Especially if you're doing barrel rolls and stuff, it's going to drain that battery really fast. Like, we went through, just when we were playing around with it, it's down to 41%. So
that was half the battery life, what you just saw.
Yeah.
And how long does it take to charge it back up?
That is a good thing, an hour to an hour and a half.
Okay.
So it charges up fast.
That's a good thing for parents to be aware of. If you want to get this and play with your kids, they're going to be a little frustrated because 10 minutes later, it's, okay, kids, we've got to take a break for an hour and a half now.
Although, if you're me, you're happy to have that break because you just, it's scary.
Tense. Is it tense?
It's scary.
When you're flying it?
It's flying that thing is scary. But the good thing is you can buy other batteries, so you can have four batteries if you want.
Ah.
And keep them all charged
and
swap them out.
How much are the batteries?
The batteries, I'm not sure how much
we'll
they
find
cost.
Out. So that's good to know that you can have other batteries charged. The other thing you said you didn't like was the iPhone app.
Yeah, the iPhone and iPad app, you saw it a little bit right there with the flip.
You pressed
barrel
the button,
roll,
didn't do anything.
And it didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, earlier, I was getting this thing to do barrel rolls like crazy, and I can't do it now. But the app is very unstable. I've actually read stories of people that had the device flying in midair.
Right.
The app crashed. The device still stayed flying until they relaunched the app, and then it just crashed to the ground.
That's not good.
Probably not good.
Because this is not a cheap article. How is it talking... Is it Wi-Fi? How is it talking to
That's the other thing. The other thing I don't really care for is it actually connects to the AR drone's Wi-Fi. So the AR drone is a Wi-Fi hotspot that's not connected to the internet. It just connects to the iPhone.
So you're taking yourself offline on the iPhone or iPad when you're using the AR drone.
And it cannot be a client on a Wi-Fi network either.
Okay. What else? I mean, I have to say, it has a high cool factor.
Oh, yeah. The cool factor. See, this is what made me think. The cool factor
We were
alone,
excited. We thought, oh, man, yeah, when this came in, we were really excited.
Really excited to play with it. And I feel like, have you ever seen the Louis C.K. bit on Conan O'Brien where everything's amazing and nobody's happy?
Yeah.
I feel like if I say this device isn't any good.
You have a helicopter.
I have a helicopter that's floating in midair miraculously.
Floating. And you're saying I want more.
And yeah, yeah. It's,
what's you wrong get, with you,
You only
Josh?
Get 15 minutes of
You're
time.
What's wrong with this world. You Gen Xers or Yers or Zers or whatever
but
gen you're in.
I will say one cool thing about when the battery runs out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're flying it at the time, it actually knows in advance, and it will automatically lower the device smoothly and land it itself.
So it doesn't crash land when it runs out of juice.
It does not crash land when it runs out of juice.
That's a good thing.
Only when the app crashes and you try to reload it.
So let's get the pros and cons. This is the Parrot AR Drone 2.0, the new AR drone.
It is.
Yeah. Pros?
Pros, I would say, obviously, the cool factor that it hovers. The HD video looks very nice. It's also very smooth, you know, when it takes it. It's kind of cool to look at.
Yeah.
The other pro, I guess I would say, is the absolute control, which is the update from the last one.
Makes it a lot easier to fly.
Makes it so much easier to fly, because now I can just, you know, I can tilt away from
me. I was actually impressed that you were able to, you know, just kind of move around very easily.
It doesn't matter which direction the device is facing, you can...
Because the original one, I had a hell of a time flying it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what's the cons on this?
The cons, I say battery is probably number one because that's...
10 minutes.
Yeah, you don't get much time with it. Number two is the app. The app is really flaky, in my experience.
They might fix that, though.
They could fix that later, though, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Price. It's price.
How much
price
is it?
$300.
$300. That's with everything, though. The app doesn't cost more. You download the app.
Free.
The $300 for the Parrot AR drone. It seems fairly robust. You haven't broken it and crashed it.
Well, I've been very careful. I've been wearing kid gloves with this thing. I've been wanting to do some really cool things, and I've been going, nope, 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 I can't do that because we wanted to show it on the show.
All right, Josh Windisch, this is the hard part, and I was coaching you before the show.
Yeah.
It's very hard when you're reviewing something like this, and there are definitely pros and there are definitely cons to come up with a recommendation, but I don't want you to say try. I want you to say buy or don't buy.
Okay, I'm a very indecisive person, but I'm going to have to say buy.
Buy.
Again, I can't say this device isn't amazing.
Buy it if you can afford $300, you can live with the battery
it's
life
a toy.
And an app that's kind of flaky.
You have to accept the fact that this is a toy. This is something you're going to play with. This is not going to have any practical use. That being said, there's a lot of fun to be had with this thing.
Well, I think that you did a great job, and just for that, I'm going to give you the official clipboard of the Twit Empire. As a parting gift. No, I'll take it back. No, you can have
like
it. You want
clipboards,
it? Man. All right, it's yours. I'll give it to you. This fuzz I'll keep.
Taking it.
So you got a chance to review a new ThinkPad from Lenovo. Now, I actually did them a disservice because this does not look like the clone of a MacBook Air. I just consider all Ultrabooks kind of the Intel response to the MacBook.
Yeah, the wedge shape, I think that's what people would think is like the MacBook Air. But otherwise, it's completely different. Obviously, it's running Windows. And it's got this awesome matte black finish on top of that carbon fiber when it comes to the roll cage. So you can really just, it's really sturdy.
Well, let's take a look. Ayaz Akhtar and his review of the Lenovo ThinkPad.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar with Twit. And today, I've been given another Ultrabook. Now, if you watch this show before you buy, you know that I've had some harsh words for certain Ultrabooks. And this is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon. I asked to review this because I've heard fantastic thing about it. If you take a look at it, it's got that no-nonsense Lenovo ThinkPad styling. We're talking about black. Basic black's got this rubberized kind of grip to it. And why this is called the X1 Carbon is because it's made of carbon fiber. So when you try to get some flex or bend in this thing, it doesn't happen. Plus, it's super light. It's like 3 pounds. See, you can twirl it around. It's got a pretty good design here. We've got a great hinge. I love hinges that let you do this. I know that seems strange, but I always find myself in weird positions with laptops on couches. And when I want to look at the angle, I want to be able to do something like that. So if you want to hold it up like a crazy tablet, you could, right? But it doesn't work that way. Also, the screen, 1600 by 900 display. This is an anti-glare, matte finish. So you're not constantly trying to find what angle you've got to go to to avoid the reflection. So that's really nice. Like I said, this is a ThinkPad, and it has a killer keyboard, super comfortable. Even though this is really thin, the travel on the keys is really good. The trackpad operated fantastically. Multi-touch worked fine. Pinch and zoom worked fine. Scrolling worked great. This is a trackpad, Lenovo. You should put in all your notebooks because the other ones kind of stink on the IdeaPad. ThinkPad's got a really great trackpad there. Also, it's a big click surface for you there. And for you old-school ThinkPad users like me, there is still the track point, so if you want to use that instead of the trackpad, you can. I still really like that. One of the most questionable things on this laptop, and most people I showed this to were confused, is something called SimpleTap. It's an interface that Lenovo put on. There's a dedicated button for it. So you click this button, and then you see this strange tiled interface. Now, you can see there's a Solution Center up. There are several different tiles that you can install through the Lenovo App Shop. Wasn't aware that they had one of these things. And one of the weird things is, if you take a look at the interface, you might start wondering, how do I get out of it? Oh, what if I just click the button again? Doesn't do anything. What if I try to go back? You can do that. You can keep clicking this little arrow until you go back to the desktop. Or you can click somewhere randomly. It'll take you back to the desktop. That is not intuitive, and I don't think it has any place on a notebook this good. This is a premium notebook, and that, Lenovo, is crapware. That has no business, has no place on something this elegant. Also, the keyboard, like I said, fantastic. Also backlit. Like I said, this is a premium notebook. This thing starts at $1,349 or $1,329, depending on the day. Lenovo partnered up with Dolby for the speakers on this. They're saying it's not tinny. You're going to get some really great sound. We can turn up the audio right now.
Projector.
There's some Twit audio.
LED light source.
And what I found was the audio was sufficiently loud. You don't have any buzzing or weird sounds with this, but you're not going to get any booming bass sounds out of this. This is a tiny notebook. You're not going to get incredible audio, but it's very, very serviceable. As this is an Ultrabook, the specs are pretty much the same as what you'll expect everywhere else. You'll get a Core i5. You can bump that up to an i7 if you want. It's got 4 gigabytes of RAM, upgradable to 8. You can throw in an SSD. This one has a 256 gigabyte SSD. So internals, effectively, not differentiated from any other Ultrabook. Again, when you're buying the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, you're buying the super light and the carbon fiber, and also the biometric sensor if you want to use a fingerprint as a password. On the pro side, the Lenovo X1 Carbon has some really beautiful styling. It doesn't look like every other thing out there. Plus, it's super sturdy. The keyboard is fantastic. The trackpad is very good. I know that some people will complain it's not as good as some of the Apple trackpads. It's a very good trackpad on the X1. On the con side, that SimpleTap interface should not be built into the X1. On top of that, the resolution of the screen could be higher. 1600 by 900 is good, but we could have gone up to a 1080p display, especially for a premium notebook. On the battery front, Lenovo says you can get 8 hours of battery. Most of the tests out there show around 5. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is the X1 a try, buy, or don't buy? I gotta say, this is a definite buy. It's a fantastic notebook. Incredibly sturdy, incredibly light. As long as you have access to an outlet sometimes after 5 or 6 hours, you're going to really enjoy this notebook. It is a standout in the Ultrabook category. I'm Isaac Actor with Twit, and this is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon.
It's also a standout because it's one of the more expensive Ultrabooks. Mm-hmm. $1,399 is the start.
Starts off at $1,350. And I said depending on the day because sometimes you could get it at $1,320.
Right.
Other times it's $1,400. I don't know. It depends which vendor you go to.
But it really does feel solid. It's nicely made. I mean, that's the one to get if you're going to get one, spend the money. I notice you have Windows 8 running on it. It doesn't come with Windows 8.
No, it comes with Windows 7. Alex was going ahead. He was messing around with the ThinkPad.
How's it run Windows 8? Though?
Windows 8 is really good and fast on this thing.
Yeah.
So it's got some impressive specs, and that's more about Windows 8. But the only other manufacturer that makes anything close to this is Asus and their ZenBooks.
I love those ZenBooks too. Yeah.
I like the ZenBooks. Yeah. Lenovo's got a winner with this one.
Your choice really is the ZenBook, which is metallic, is metal, it's brushed aluminum. Or if you like the kind of velvety black of Lenovo's ThinkPads, then that's really your choice. Or if you want the better trackpad and the TrackPoint mouse. A lot of people love that TrackPoint.
And this is super thin. The fact that the travel is so nice on the keyboard, I found surprising because, again, there shouldn't be a whole lot of travel, but there is. It feels like an old notebook.
You know, my friend Cory Doctorow does. He buys those ThinkPads. I'm sure he's got the X1, and he puts Linux on it immediately so you don't have to worry about the Windows crapware on it. I wish they'd do a signature version of this so it would just be pure Windows experience.
Well, actually, the biggest product we got into the Twit Brick House this week, of course, was the iPhone 5. We've all tried it, but we thought we'd let Sarah Lane, who's the host of i5 for the iPhone, be the first to deliver a review. Sarah?
Hey, everybody. Sarah Lane here with Twit for Before You Buy. I have been tasked with the very, very difficult job of reviewing the iPhone 5 for you all. I'm kidding, of course, because I'm kind of the iPhone person around Harry. Do a show about iPhones, i5. Leo and I talk about iOS on iPad Today each week, so it just kind of made sense that I would talk about the iPhone. But I want to try to give it as honest a review as possible because, of course, it's all about whether you should buy it or not and what you should know beforehand. First things first, this is LTE capable. This is a Verizon iPhone. Of course, I, living in San Francisco, have the option of going AT&T or Verizon. And Verizon LTE, although I've heard the same of AT&T, is really fast. So I noticed right off the bat that anything that requires internet is a lot faster, and in some cases, faster than the Wi-Fi that might be available in the same space. You've also got the longer iPhone itself. I call it the long phone because you've got another row on your home screen, and any other screen, of course, of apps to choose from. So this is the sort of thing that I have mixed feelings about so far. It seems okay. It doesn't make the phone too much bigger than my previous 4S, which I still love, by the way. But it does take some getting used to. It's almost like, there's a lot going on here. What do I put on my home screen? Because now it's a little bit more complicated. I think I'm going to get used to it. It is a little bit thinner. Not a ton thinner, but it's definitely thinner. And you really do feel the difference when you're holding it because it's also lighter. In fact, I've had people say, I think I need a case on this thing because it's like it's going to float away. It's so light. It's not really that much lighter, actually, when you actually look at the specs between the previous iPhones, 4 and the 4S being of pretty much the same weight, and the 5. There's not a huge difference, but because it's longer, because it's thinner, and because it's somewhat lighter, it really does feel like it's almost missing a battery in there or something, but it's not. By the way, what's cool about this is battery is almost always even an iPhone lover's biggest complaint. You start the day with a full charge. If you have a certain amount of brightness so that you're comfortable reading throughout the day and you use your phone fairly regularly, sometimes you don't get through the whole day. You might have to have a Mophie pack or something for additional battery. This phone, it's faster. It's actually got a faster internal computer. And the battery holds up. And in some cases, people say it's actually better than it was before. So you're actually getting the same quality with a better package. What else can we talk about? Headphone jack is on the bottom. I made a big deal about this when it came out, and everyone went, yeah, whatever. iPod Touch has been doing that for a while. It's not a big deal. People are used to it. I still think that's strange. When I put my phone in my purse, the headphone jack comes out the top, and that's sometimes how I find it, and I've got my earbuds and the whole thing. So that's going to take some getting used to, too. But part of the reason that this happened is now because the dock connector changed from a 30-pin connector to a 9-pin down on the bottom, which is still proprietary, and some people are kind of mad that it's not micro SIM, but this is the way that it is. Now Apple has quite a bit of room down on the bottom to add stuff like a headphone jack. So the top of the iPhone is nice and fluid. You got your little on-off button, and that's about it. One thing that people have started to complain about, and this is particularly with the black models, is this anodized covering. We've got a nice new covering on the back, which looks lovely right out of the box, and quickly gets a little scuffy looking. You know, it's not the same beautiful glass that the black and white iPhone 4S has had. This helps it be thinner and lighter, yes, definitely, but a little bit more fragile and more susceptible to nicks and scrapes. Now, if you don't have a case with your iPhone, whether it's an iPhone 5 or any iPhone, you know that you're always susceptible to nicks and scrapes, but it sounds like these guys are a little bit more fragile than their predecessors. Word on the street is that the white iPhones hold up a little bit better, but I'm hearing complaints across the board, so that's something to keep in mind. Pros with this, if you're an iPhone lover already, it's just the logical next step. This phone is amazing. It's beautiful, it's thinner, it's lighter, it does everything that you want it to do, plus it's running the best version of iOS 6 there is, so it really is an upgrade. Cons, it's expensive, it's definitely fragile and might be a little too fragile for you, and if you were looking for a reason to switch to iOS and didn't have one already, I'm not sure that iOS 6 and a larger iPhone is going to really sway you. It's not that much of a difference from the ecosystem that Apple already had. It's a nice upgrade, but it's not anything revolutionary or different. For me, I think it's clear, it's an absolute buy, but I'm a little biased, but that's okay. Buy it.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this. Of course, if you have an iPhone, you're going to want the new iPhone no matter what. I mean, you're just going to buy the new iPhone, aren't you? This one is not so much better than the 4S that I would run out and get it. My recommendation would be buy if you have an earlier iPhone. But if you have a 4S, it might be worth a try. It's certainly true if you're in an LTE area, either with Sprint, AT&T, or Verizon, you should look at it. LTE is so much faster. The good news is the battery life, even on LTE, and I'm on LTE here at our brick house, does not diminish with LTE. Apple's done some magic, and it has at least as good battery life as the earlier iPhones.
You probably are missing Leo, as we all are. So let's start with Leo Laporte. Before he took off on his vacation, he took home the Nest thermostat. Let's see what he thought about it.
Okay, so when I first moved in here, it had a standard Honeywell programmable thermostat. You've probably seen this before. You set the time, you set the temperature, and then you leave it. Problem is, I don't have a very regular schedule, so the heat was coming on many times when I wasn't here, and it was often off when I wanted it to be warm. I replaced the Honeywell with this. This is the Nest programmable thermostat. And this is fantastic. Now, first of all, I have to tell you, I am no handyman. But the Nest comes with everything you need to transfer from this to the Nest. And in fact, it's very easy. There's just a few wires. In most cases, thermostats are low power devices, so you don't have to worry about electrocuting yourself. And it's pretty easy to get the wires just right. Nest makes it extra easy, though, by giving you an installation kit that not only has all the screws and parts you need, it even has a screwdriver with four different bits. It's kind of something you might want to keep around. They also have labels you can stick on the wires so you get the right color for each wire. It couldn't be easier to install the Nest. Once you've installed it, you'll have a plate that looks kind of like this. These are the different colored wires. Nest is capable of handling both air conditioning and heating. I just have heating here, so there are fewer wires. It's very simple. Notice the Nest base plate has a level built into it, which makes it easy to get it level. And they also have, you don't have to use this. I did in my case because I have a large plate behind my old thermostat, a larger plate to cover that up. So it's a nice installation. The Nest itself is just this beautiful, thin little device. You plug it right in. It connects very easily, presses in. And now this is the thermostat. A couple of interesting things. On setup, the first thing you do is attach the Nest to your Wi-Fi network. Yes, it has a built-in Wi-Fi receiver. The Nest uses that to communicate with you and to find out what the local weather is so that it doesn't turn the heat on a hot day or the air conditioning on a cold day. It actually knows what temperature it is. It also has motion sensors, so it knows when you're home and will adjust itself to your schedule. So all you have to do when you first get the Nest is set the temperature to a comfortable temperature whenever you're here. It's very easy. This just rotates. The dial rotates. Notice there's a little green leaf that shows up when you're in an ecological setting. And the Nest has already been at work here for a while, so it knows some things about my habits. So it, for instance, knows that it's going to turn the heat down at 10:30 when I go to bed because it knows it doesn't see me around. So I'm going to set it to 70. It's telling me, okay, but based on previous behavior, I'm going to turn that off at 10:30. You can adjust that as well. Most of the time, I just let the Nest do its own thing. Now, here's a great thing. Let's say the heat's on and I left the house, forgot to turn it off. I don't want to waste the whole day heating a house that's empty. Nest also has iPhone and Android apps. This is my house. Because the Nest is online on the Wi-Fi network, I'm also able to control it remotely. It's showing where the nest is in Petaluma, California, the current external temperature. Here's my house. It's even showing a little clouds to show the weather. And here's the thermostat. And if I tap it, it's just like the Nest thermostat at home. I could turn the thermostat up and down remotely. So if I want to turn the heat down because I'm not home, I can do that right now. And a minute or two later, the Nest will turn itself off and my house will be unheated. Or let's say I'm coming home and I want to turn it up before I get home, I can do that as well. Nest has a couple of advantages. First of all, it's smart. It learns your behavior so you don't heat or cool your home when you don't need it heated or cooled. It knows the weather outside. It adjusts itself in some unique ways. They've even put some smarts into it. For instance, if you're using it as an air conditioner control, it's smart enough to know that the coils will still have some cooling capability even after the air conditioner has been turned off. So Nest leaves the fan on for a few more minutes to circulate that cool air even after the compressor has been turned off. It's little things like this, little touches like this, that make the Nest so sweet. Now, it's expensive, $250. If you're building a new home, even that's still more expensive than a regular thermostat, but not quite so prohibitive. If you're going to replace an existing thermostat, it's a lot of money. Money you probably won't make up, except maybe over a few years in saved heating and cooling costs. But it is really cool. The design is beautiful. And you can see its heritage. Tony Fadell, who founded Nest, was one of the early iPod designers. And I think he wanted to put that same kind of smarts into a thermostat. It really is great. In fact, even the packaging is well thought out, and he's just done a great job with it. So, pros and cons. On the pros, it's definitely a smarter thermostat. You don't have to program it. It learns over time. It takes account of things that a normal thermostat doesn't take account of, like movement in the home and the external weather. It's done a very good job for me, even in just a few weeks of use. I imagine over time it'll get smarter and smarter. Another pro, by the way, it's very easy to install. Don't be put off. I'm not a handyman by any means. I had no trouble doing it in just a few minutes, and I had all the tools that I needed supplied in the box with the Nest. The con, of course, is the price. $250 is pretty pricey. You can save some money by buying the older Nest, but the newer one is lower profile, has some additional features. I figure, why not get the latest and greatest? My recommendation on the Nest, an absolute buy. If you can get over the price hump, this thing is super cool. How many times will you have guests over and show them your cool thermostat, huh? Now, that's nice to have. A definite buy on the Nest.
So there you go. If you don't care about money, it's a cool thing to have. Actually, I totally want one. I'm just as bad. I want that cool interface, even if it's not going to save me money. But if you're building a new house, it sounds like that's the way to go because it gives you so much control, and it probably does make sense because you will make that extra money back since you have to buy a thermostat in a new construction anyway.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here with the HTC One S. This is one of many phones being released on HTC's One line. This in particular will be on T-Mobile's HSPA Plus network. It's $199 on a two-year contract, $599 without. Let's take a look at the specs. It's a 1.5 gigahertz dual-core Qualcomm Snapdragon S4 processor. Has a 4.3-inch Super AMOLED display with QHD Pentile technology that runs at 960 by 540 resolution. It has Ice Cream Sandwich, it's 4.0.3, and it's also running HTC's Sense 4 overlay. It has an 8-megapixel rear-facing camera, VGA-quality front-facing camera, and actually this is capable of recording 1080p HD video as well. It has 16 gigs of internal storage, 1 gig of RAM. It does not have an SD card slot. There's a non-removable 1650 milliamp hour lithium-ion battery inside. And as well, it does not have HDMI or NFC, which is kind of a bummer. But let's take a look at the design. First of all, it's extremely thin and light. It's the thing that strikes you the moment you pick up this phone. It has a gray anodized aluminum unibody design. The overall stylings make this phone feel very expensive in your hand. It has a solid feel, build quality is top-notch, and yeah, there's just not a whole lot more I can say about this phone. I loved using it. My one main complaint is that the power button on the top is maybe recessed a little too far. So with the edge right here, it can be a little difficult hitting that power button at a moment, but that actually prevents it from being hit in your pocket. So that's probably more of a feature than it is a ding on the design. Now let's take a look at the display. It's a QHD Pentile screen, and right off the top, I have to say that my eyes see that immediately, so it was kind of hard for me to unsee it. However, a lot of people aren't sensitive to that, so I would say go to a T-Mobile store and pick it up and use it for a few minutes to see if that Pentile screen really screams out at you. The display is considerably bright indoors. I had a little bit of outdoor visibility issues with it, but overall, not many complaints there. And the capacitive buttons on the very bottom mean that your screen real estate isn't being stolen for the on-screen buttons like they are on a phone like the Galaxy Nexus. So you actually get all of that resolution for your apps and your games. Now onto performance. It's very snappy. There was very little lag at all throughout using this device, and that's including HTC's Sense 4. Everything's just super quick on here and super responsive thanks to the Snapdragon S4 processor. Now let's take a look at the camera. The rear-facing camera is awesome. Picture quality is actually very, very good, and it's improved more in pictures that you take in like bright daylight. The front-facing camera on the front, of course, it's VGA quality, so you shouldn't expect a whole lot. And the 1080p video recording is fantastic. They actually have a dual-mode video recorder in here so that when you're running in video, you can still take pictures, and that's a nice feature. Now let's look at calling. Calls were very clear and loud, and actually this phone differentiates itself in the sense that it supports Wi-Fi calling. When Wi-Fi turns off, it'll switch right back to T-Mobile's cellular network. It's great when it works. I had a couple of calls where the person on the other end couldn't actually hear me, and I wasn't sure if that was the Wi-Fi calling feature or if it was just some strange glitch. I also heard little clicks and pops through most of my Wi-Fi calls, so I'd say it's a nice feature to have in a pinch, but I wouldn't rely on it all the time. Now storage. I told you there's no SD card slot in here, and you are locked in at 16 gigs of internal storage. If that's not enough for you, this could be a serious downside on the phone. Having said that, HTC has a deal with Dropbox, so you get 2 years of cloud storage through Dropbox with 25 gigs of storage space there. So maybe that's a good alternative for you. As for the battery, I said it's non-removable, it's under here and you can't take it out, but I had really good battery life. I'm talking probably 15, 16 hours, multiple days with plenty of battery left over when I plugged it in at night, and that's all on T-Mobile's HSPA Plus network. I was very impressed by the battery performance of this phone. It also ships with Beats Audio, and I would not consider this a determining factor in your purchasing decision. It makes a very subtle change to the music that you listen to on the phone. It's really just a glorified EQ that you can't even adjust. And finally, I want to spend a few moments talking about Sense. HTC has redesigned Sense up to version 4. Not sure if it's Sense 4 or this device, but Sense has never felt smoother and lighter. Everything feels super snappy. The camera app is superb. I really enjoyed using the camera app and wanted to turn on the phone just to take pictures because the app was so much fun to play with. Sense's multitasking screen is much less usable than the one on Ice Cream Sandwich because the screens take up almost the full entire screen, so it's really hard to get a true sense of all the apps that you have open at any given time. It really slows you down. Overall, it's better than previous versions of Sense, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I'd opt for this over vanilla. But you can always pick up other launchers like Nova or Apex to give you a little bit of that vanilla Ice Cream Sandwich feel. All right, so let's take a look at the pros of the device. It has an expensive look and feel that make you proud to use the phone. The camera app and picture quality inspire more photos. And the phone as a whole feels super quick, and that's including Sense 4.0. Now the cons. It has a non-removable battery. 16 gigs of storage with no SD card slot might be too little for some. And lastly, the display is iffy for those sensitive to Pentile displays. Overall, I'm pretty sad to see this review end because I really enjoyed using the phone, and I'd say that probably means that I would recommend that you buy the HTC One S. I'm Jason Howell with Twit, and you can find my other reviews on another show I do, All About Android, at twit.tv/AAA. Otherwise, thank you for watching my review of the HTC One S.
We're going to kick things off, I guess, with Iaz Akhtar, who has the hottest product out right now. I've been dying to see it. Give me that.
There you go, Leo.
I haven't seen it yet. This is the new Kindle, the Paperwhite, which
It was announced last month, but finally came out just a few days ago.
Right, October 2nd or so. Like, I came into work for it from a vacation just to get my paper white.
And you bought it.
That is mine.
This is your personal copy. Right. So, I mean, observe right away that it is very much like the basic Kindle. It's the same size, no keyboard. It's a touch screen, though, which is a little bit different.
Touch screen is super fast, and one of the things about it, though, no buttons, and there's a long tutorial. If you don't pay attention to it, you're not going to know how to use it because you don't have any buttons.
The other thing I was curious about, you know, when they say paper white, they imply that it's a white screen with black ink, and that's what kind of the holy grail for readers is. This is a little bit less, a little more contrasty, a little less blue-gray than the old Kindle, but still not white.
Well, I have the brightness turned down. I can mess with that, and you can probably see how bright it can
tell be. Tell you what. Let's take a look. Ayaz Akhtar from TNT and Know How and his review of the Kindle Paperwhite.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar with TWiT, and this is the Kindle Paperwhite, and that's the name of it. People keep making fun of it, saying it's a paperweight. It's not. It's just really thin and light. If you look around the design, kind of very boring, you know, black, matte, one button only. So the thing is, when you get the device, there's a really lengthy tutorial because everything is done on the touchscreen. So I'm going to turn this on, and there's going to be a swipe to unlock. And you can see it's really, really fast and responsive. It's got this tablet-style interface. You can pick a book. You can see the text is really small. And one of the things about this Kindle is that it's got a higher pixel density, so you can get really small fonts on there. I like reading a whole lot of things like that. And you also have that main feature of the light. So we're going to show you the light. Light's completely off right now. We can turn it way up, this little slider. And now it looks really white. And when you actually bring it down, you'll start noticing how gray or brown the e-ink display normally is. And that's look at the prettiness. Now, one of the things that Amazon did when they did the lighting is that they're saying it's not backlit or front lit. This piece of glass itself is lit, which makes the reading experience pretty nice. I enjoy reading it at night and in low light situations. One of the things I noticed, though, on low light, I don't know if this will be picked up on camera, the light isn't 100% even on the bottom. There's a little bit of unevenness on the bottom, but if you turn it way up, you don't notice that at all. Page turns are incredibly fast, and the touchscreen is very responsive. That's really fast. As you can see, this is the ad-supported model, so when it's turned off, you'll actually see an ad. And when you're going to your books, you'll see recommendations for other books. When you go to your second page of books, those ads disappear and you have this lower ad. So if you want, you can buy a different version. This is the Wi-Fi special offer version, so it's about $120. You can pay a little more, get no ads, and even get a 3G radio if you want. But considering I do a lot of reading offline, I really enjoy this device. On the pro side, it's thin and light, and it's really easy to read on. If you like to try to read on a tablet and you got that big glowing screen on your face, not so great. I really enjoy reading on the e-ink display like the one on the Kindle. It's so light that it's really a great device to read for a long time. On the downside, this black matte finish, apparently I'm a very greasy person. Lots of oily spots there. You got to clean it with some kind of cloth. I'm going to see if I can clean it right now. No, you can clean it if you have a microfiber cloth, but it's something that you might not like after a while. The fact that it's got no buttons, I believe the old one had a home button, you really got to pay attention to that tutorial. So is the Kindle Paperwhite a try, buy, or don't buy? Well, if you like e-ink displays, it's definitely a buy. At $120, the ads, I don't find them too intrusive. I really like the display. It's really crisp, and it's just really nice to read on. I'm a big fan, and I enjoy reading on it, so I definitely say it's a buy if you like reading. I'm Ayaz Akhtar with TWiT, and this is the Kindle Paperwhite.
You're not getting this back, buddy boy. This is nice.
And that's the Kindle I've been waiting for, because I bought a whole lot of Kindle books, and I saw the Nook Simple Glow, or the Simple Touch Glow, and this device is just perfect. It's got the density that's just... I like really small text, so I can fit a whole lot. Plus, that screen's a whole lot larger than my old Kindle. I have the Kindle 2.
Well, you also, when you said it's fast, it's noticeably faster. One of the knocks on the Kindle was the kind of ugly page turn. It would flash, and that was kind of the nature of e-ink. But now this is so fast that it doesn't really bug you as much to see it. You also said it made a good point. You really should read the instructions because it's not obvious. You know, everything's kind of hidden away. But I am impressed. This is gorgeous. Explain to me again. You said it in your video, but I don't understand. So this is the light, and when it's all the way up, and here we are in a bright set, that is pretty paper white. That's about as good contrast as I'd expect. But that's the backlight? What's going on?
It's actually a front light. So the device itself has a piece of glass. As far as this is what Amazon said, it's a piece of glass on the front. And there's a light that flows through that piece of glass. Uh-huh. So it's not like the device itself is backlit or front lit. It's that glass that's lit. And that allows you to see it. So you're not getting light thrown in your eyes. And back to this whole e-ink thing.
I do like it that it glows. I agree with you. Indiglo or the Nook and so forth makes it so much easier to read at night.
Now, there is some ghosting on that device. If you don't like that, you can have the e-ink entirely refresh each time you turn a page.
That slows it down.
Yeah, it slows it down a little bit, and you have that horrible black flash. So when you're doing this right now, Leo, it's doing just the small changes.
I see the little ghosting, yeah.
It's
really not bad.
It's not bad at all. I mean, like, you'd have to look for it to notice it.
It's the same technology as used as an Etch-a-Sketch.
Effectively, yeah. It's just a black wall.
Instead of shaking it, they turn the page, they do it electrically. I have to say, now that I've held it, and I think that's one thing we probably can't communicate very well in a show like this, it really is everything you kind of hope for. It's light, it's very legible, and I think the backlight is very nicely implemented. When you turn it all the way up, does it really kill battery life?
No, apparently all the numbers that Amazon says with their
2 weeks,
lives,
they're claiming.
That life is based on the battery turn. I mean, the light turned way up on based on a 30-minute reading cycle a day. So the thing is, when you get the device, by the way, it's actually
8 weeks.
The light's already turned on. So when you hit on, you have to turn the light off if you want it that way. So it's by default, the lights are on that thing.
And there is a button, one button. It's
one
the
button,
on-off button at the
button.
Bottom, and then the charging. I am impressed, especially at $119. If I pay $20 more, I can get rid of the ads, but who cares?
Yeah, the ads aren't so intrusive, except when you're looking at your catalog and you see this second bar. I find that a little bit cheesy there. I don't need that.
But $20 isn't a lot.
It's not so much money.
All right. Iaz Akhtar, thank you very much for that first review of the Paperwhite. Bad name. People keep calling it the Paperweight. It's not heavy enough.
It's not heavy enough to be. Unless it's that one paper, Leo.
This thing has been hard to get off the table. It's got a great suction cup. I am very excited about the GoPro cameras. This is their newest, the Hero 2. I'm thinking about taking it to Australia. We're going to the Great Barrier Reef. I want an underwater camera, something that I can do some extreme sports with. Brian Burnett took it out for a spin.
Thanks, Leo. And I took the GoPro for a little spin around Northern California, but let me get rid of the passengers and my gear real quick. Hi, I'm Brian Burnett from TWiT, here to review the GoPro Hero 2. This is a small, compact camera that you can fit in a lot of different areas. And for me, I used my motorcycle. And I'll show you some of the footage in just a sec. But let me tell you about this camera. This is the Hero 2 Motorsport Edition. So what that means is it comes with the waterproof casing and suction cup mount, which works really well on flat, clean surfaces, painted preferably. I was able to stick it on the side of my fairing, on my gas tank, and the suction cup holds on really well. So this little camera does come with some compromises, but it delivers a big picture. This is an HD camera. It runs at 1080p, 30 frames per second. You can do 960p, 720p. This camera also came bundled with the Wi-Fi backpack and wireless remote. So that lets you set up your camera, walk away. You can either change the mode from video, still shots, timed shots. So this camera is advertised as an extreme sport camera. It's made to take a tumble if need be. It's got this protective case around it, and it's also waterproof. I do own the original GoPro Hero, and I did some comparison testing, and the video with the new Hero 2 is really crisp and clear. Looks great. The old one wasn't bad either, but you can really tell the difference in this video here, side by side. During daytime, it's the new Hero 2 is really sharp, really crisp, a little bit better color saturation than the previous Hero. The previous Hero had a 5-megapixel camera sensor. The new Hero 2 has an 11-megapixel sensor. So it really does a great job even just for wide-angle still shots. And the wide-angle lens on this goes up to 170 degrees, so you can really get a huge field of view when you're doing all sorts of different sporting activities. So I'll show you some of the footage that I got with the GoPro here, not too far from the TWiT Brick House, out towards the coast. One of my favorite things to do. And also, you can use this camera for underwater stuff. I know Leo mentioned he wanted to use one for his swimming trip, and That would work great because it does have the waterproof case, but you also have to make sure to buy a different lens for it because if you take it underwater, it won't be focused unless you have the flat underwater lens for it. There's a head strap mount that you can use if you're going out hiking or biking or you just want a point of view from your head. So one of the other things I used this camera for was a time lapse during one of the TNT shows. Set it up by the set, you can see Tom and Iez doing their thing, and Jason reaching around on the TriCaster frantically in this stop motion that I did using the GoPro. All right, so now onto battery life. This comes with a rechargeable USB cable. It's got a lithium-ion battery in the back, 1100 milliamp battery that you can take out the back and replace if you have extras, which I would recommend because at 1080p, I was getting about 3 hours of recording time. And if you have a 16 gigabyte or even a 32 gigabyte SD card, you're not gonna fill up that card before the battery dies out. So it's good to maybe get a couple of extra batteries. There are a ton of accessories. It's almost like an Apple product. There's a lot of different things that you may need that don't come in the basic package. There's a viewfinder, there's different kind of mounts. There's even a 3D case. If you had two GoPros, you can put them together and get a 3D view. They're really versatile cameras, but that will cost you extra. This Motorsport Edition camera by itself with the mounting accessories is $299.99. On the GoPro website. It can be found on Amazon for $265, which is a pretty good deal. And the Wi-Fi wireless remote combo kit that came with this review unit is an extra $99 on top of that. But what you get with the Wi-Fi attachment is the separate remote, which you can change the menu settings with, which came in really handy when I had this camera set on the swing arm of my motorcycle because I could have the remote on my handlebar, press the button, start recording without having to stop riding, pull over to the side of the road and hit the button. What is also offered but isn't out yet is Android and iOS app for this, which would allow you to use your cell phone as a viewfinder. All right, so the pros of this camera. The video is outstanding. 1080, 720, you have different view angles that you can set this camera to, and they all look terrific. These cameras are really tough and tiny, and you can put them in all kinds of different places. Another pro is all the different hardware mounts you get. You get the suction cup with this kit, you get sticky mounts, you get little hinges and pivots so you can angle in different ways, and you get all sorts of cool camera shots that you typically wouldn't be able to get with a normal size camera. So for the cons for this camera, there's no viewfinder and the menu screen is on the front of the camera to if you're trying to access that. The other con is the menu system itself. It's a single button push to select, and if you go past the mode that you want to select, you'll have to go all the way through the menu system again to get back to that. So once you get the hang of it, it's not too much of a problem, but it can be a little tricky when you're first learning how to navigate the system. So buy, try, or don't buy. This is a definite buy for me. And even if you're upgrading from the old Hero camera, your mounts will fit this one. They're both compatible. And the video is worth it enough for the upgrade. Well, thanks for watching. I hope you enjoyed a little look into the outside of the brick house. And see you next time on Before You Buy.
That's Brian Burnett, our technical director for the show, one of the great editors here at the Twit Brick House. This looks like a really sweet product. This is, we heard the announcement about a week and a half ago at the Worldwide Developers Conference, the MacBook Pro with Retina display. And I've been calling it the MacBook Elite. In an elite price, but also an elite form factor that some people will say is the best MacBook ever. That's what Apple's calling it. Is it? In short, yes. But there are definitely trade-offs. First of all, look how thin it is. It's only slightly thinner than the MacBook Air. It is a lot heavier, a pound and a half heavier. So some people are going to say, well, that's a little too heavy for me to carry. It's a big screen. That's a 15.4-inch screen. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. They have different connectors on this, and that's one of the big changes here. Two Thunderbolt ports. That's kind of overkill. I'm not sure why you have two Thunderbolt ports on it. They've now got USB 3 because this is based on the Ivy Bridge platform from Intel, which kind of gives you USB 3 for free. I've ordered a USB flash drive, and I'll give you a report on how fast it is. Apparently, with USB 3, we're going to be able to read at 220 megabytes a second. I mean, it is noticeably, appreciably, lots faster if you get the drive that has the speed. On the other side, another USB 3 connector. And wait a minute, what's that? That's an HDMI port. Now, we really never missed HDMI on the MacBooks with Thunderbolt because Thunderbolt's easily converted. This is a mini display port. You can buy an inexpensive adapter that turns it into HDMI. We use those all the time around the studio. They're reliable, they're cheap, they're easy to use. So I'm not really sure why they felt the need to put an HDMI port on it, but it'll certainly be welcome for anybody who wants to connect this to a TV. It works great. We plug in our HDMI adapters here. The MacBook instantly sensed it, instantly set the resolution to an appropriate scale, and it worked just flawlessly and without any configuration on our part. I do appreciate that. Of course, finally, you'll see an SD card slot here, which Apple has included on all of its MacBook Pros lately. The keyboard is very similar, backlit keyboard. They have a great Apple trackpad, best in class, with this glass trackpad. But the screen is, of course, what's getting all the attention. This is a very high-resolution screen. It's native resolution, and I say that carefully because you're not going to be using its native resolution most of the time. Its native resolution is double the old 15.4-inch MacBook Pro. It's 2880 across by 1800 top to bottom. It is a very high-resolution display, the highest resolution display I've ever seen in this size of a screen. If I set this screen to that native resolution, though, menus are too tiny to use, windows are so small, icons are so small, and you can't read the text. So this display, if you use Apple's best for Retina setting, will always be, get ready for this, 1440 by 900. What, you might say? Well, because it's got so many extra pixels, it's using subpixel rendering, aliasing to make text look super crisp, and I'll show you the text looks fantastic on this. And in applications written by Apple and soon by other companies to take advantage of the Retina display, when it needs the additional resolution, it can use it. As an example, Aperture will use the higher resolution. This is VLC, and it's giving me this. I'm going to show you a movie. In fact, let me show you right now. This is a fantastic movie that was shot in 4K. This is a 1620p version of Timescapes that the developers sent to me. And the resolution on this, the crispness on this, you're probably not seeing it at home because you're only seeing it at best at 720p. Believe me, you've never seen anything look so good. It looks like you're looking through a window. Hear how good that music sounds? They have updated the speakers. They're not super loud, but the quality is noticeably better. Very good for a notebook. You know, if you really want high fidelity, you're still going to attach speakers to the MacBook Pro with Retina. Initially, Apple has updated its apps, Safari, Aperture, iPhoto, iMovie, to take advantage of this incredible display. And I've already seen some other apps be updated. There are a number of apps. Chrome today came out in the developer channel with an updated Chrome that looks fantastic. Most of the time, though, if you're not using that updated Chrome, you'll want to use Safari as your browser. Otherwise, sites don't look very good. And it's interesting, there's some applications like Twitter that just look terrible. And the reason is Twitter, for an example, in order to make scrolling faster, doesn't use the native text rendering libraries in the Macintosh, the WebKit libraries. It actually pre-renders the text and then kind of displays it as an image so it scrolls faster. That turns out to have been a bad strategy when we get to the Retina display. I'm sure, in fact, I think Twitter's already said they'll be updating that application. Meanwhile, applications that do use WebKit will already take advantage. I mean, the text on this, I have to show you, is spectacular. If you're doing any reading at all, you will be very happy. Let's go to Slashdot, which is a very text-heavy site, and show you how great it looks. Well, you may not really be able to tell, but believe me, now that I've been reading text on this screen, I can't go back to anything. The Retina display on the Apple or the iPhone, or maybe my Samsung Galaxy S. Here, I'll dim it a little bit so you can see a little bit better. It's just so good. You'll see it immediately when you open up the computer. The icons look so great on the dock. Everything is crisper and much, much more legible. It really, unfortunately, there's no point in getting closer to your screen, though, folks, because you're just not going to see it. at home. You have to go to an Apple store to take a look. Battery life on this has been pretty good. It charges fast. They did change the MagSafe adapter, so if you order this, you're going to want to get a $10 MagSafe adapter so you can use it with your other power supplies. Unaccountably, they now have the MagSafe adapter sticking back out as it used to instead of the nice slim form factor that they have on the MacBook Airs. I'm not sure why they did that. I don't think there's any technical reason for that. There's one other thing people might have noticed and are very upset about. There's no Etherport on this. So if you work somewhere where there's no Wi-Fi or you need Ethernet when you travel around, you're either going to want to buy the additional Ethernet adapter that plugs into the USB 3, or you're just not going to want to buy this computer. There are compromises in its design. However, there are no compromises in the SSD. It's very fast, and the Retina display, it's gorgeous. I am very happy with it. It's thin, it's light, and it is absolutely, in my opinion, the best MacBook ever. $21.99 for the base unit. The base unit comes pretty well equipped with an 8 gigabyte RAM and 256 gigabyte SSD, an i7 quad core i7 running at, I think, 2.3 gigahertz, although, of course, as needed, it can speed up to even faster than 3 gigahertz. I found this machine to be the fastest Mac I've ever used, partly because of the SSD, partly because of the quad-core i7, faster even than my Xeon Mac Pro at home. And if, by the way, I know people want to know, yes, it plays Diablo beautifully, even at the highest resolution. Just spectacular. It looks great. It feels great. I like carrying it around. A little bit heavier than a MacBook Air, but, boy, you sure get a whole lot more. Would I buy this? Well, let me give you the pros and cons first. The pros: the great display, the very high speed, the gorgeous looks, the ultra slim profile. The cons: no Ethernet port. It is not upgradable or repairable in any way. They've glued all the parts in here. In fact, it is pricey. That's the third con, and you're going to have to, I think, buy the $350 AppleCare when you buy this. So add another $350 to the cost, making it $25.50 plus tax, because you cannot service this. You're going to have to bring it back to Apple. They say 1,000 charges on the battery, but after that, it's $200 to replace the battery, and only Apple can do it. Pentalobe screws, glued-in parts. Even the screen is glued together. There's no glass in the front. That's a little disappointing. It means it's not repairable. That's a con. But overall, absolutely strong buy recommendation. If you can afford it and you want the top of the line, this absolutely is a MacBook Pro Elite, the new MacBook Pro with Retina display. Just a gorgeous work of art. And I think a harbinger of things to come from Apple.